My guest this evening is Dan Graham.
He's a trained theatre director and a disability arts advocate who served on the board of Arts Access Australia in the past and currently co-chair with artists with the Disability Committee for MEAA. He's attended the Directors' Labs in Chicago and LA and the International Society for the Performing Arts in New York in 2019. And he was back earlier this year in 2021 for the online conference. He's completed a directing residency at Atlanta Theatre Company, where he's invited to rehearsals of The Mother by Florian Zeller and translated by Christopher Hampton, which featured or starred, let's say, more so, Isabel Hubbard. His directing includes Christine Love by Howard Brenton, A Kind of Alaska by Pinter, Wolf Lullaby by Hilary Bell, Crucible by Arthur Miller. It goes on. He's directed a one-man show with a deaf artist. He's working with Bell Shakespeare. There's so much to talk about this evening. He's juggling many balls. They're all up in the air. And he's here to talk about his life in the theatre and how it all began. Welcome to Stages, Dan.
Hi, Regina. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming on. So how did life start for you? Where were you born? Where did you grow up? And what was it like?
Okay. Ironically, I was actually born here in Sydney, and where I'm talking to you now is in St. Leonard's, and I'm literally just down the road from the North Shore Hospital where I was actually born.
Oh.
And I actually, exactly. So I'm literally just down the road, so all good.
But you've been all over the place since.
Absolutely. So I always make a comment that basically the first part of my life, actually till I finished high school, was in Sydney. I actually went to, I don't know if your listeners would know, of Bradfield College, but I went there where a lot of arts, well-known people in arts went, like Rose Byrne was in a year above me, etc. So that kind of, so that gives a bit of an idea. And I actually moved down to Tassie after my HSC, and basically, as you said, I've been all over the place and back here for now, and especially in this time of COVID. So
So how did you get involved in the theatre? Were your parents creative? Like, what was it like?
I'm very lucky in the sense that, but unfortunately, my dad is no longer alive, but he was actually a professor of literature. And my mum is actually a retired assistant principal who was in charge of, we always like to say, one of my earliest theatre memories is actually, and this does disclose my age somewhat, but was the Year of Peace concert in 1986. And I remember she literally had everything like music from Fiddler of the Roof playing in the background, to doing the Rainbow Connection in sign language without, it was actually a thing, if that makes sense.
Wow.
And I've always been brought up, you know, in terms of to lovely arts, especially from my mum. And when it came to basically what got me into it in the first place, as we are going to discuss later on, my interest in terms of, as I said, I identify as being neurodiverse, but I always like to say I'm Dan first and foremost. I'm of a vintage also that basically people saw neurodiversity must, because it involves neurological, it must be intellectual. So I was often referred to as being stupid or not bright or whatever you want to call it. And a lot of that was from teachers that I had at school. So I think mum saw, which sounds quite funny to say, because I didn't have a voice, you know, and I didn't have an outlet to basically promote my creativity, and it was never thought about as, you know, a career. But mum sent me to classes as A2IP just to get me out of my shell, and so she's created this monster. So
Well, it was a different time, I think, in terms of attitudes towards disability. So what is it exactly, and when did your family become aware?
I think I've always been aware one way or another.
Yeah.
I actually said to mum when I knew I was going to talk to you, I said to mum, okay, question for you, mum. If I hadn't have had what I classify as a neurodiversity, which in my instance can encompass dyslexia, ADD, et cetera, but as neurodiversity, you can also classify people on autism spectrum, Asperger's, dyscalculia. We could be here for a whole...
All evening.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think with basically, I said to mum, what would I've been like if I hadn't have had inverted commas neurodiversity? She said, you would have always been different. I remember as one of my earliest or early memories as a kid was I had a lady who was like a grandma to me. I was always interested in all things, the Oscars and the Tony Awards, but always above behind the scenes. And I never understood what that meant. It's obviously 5-year-old. And this lady who was like a grandma to me made me a velvet bow tie. So here am I in my pajamas, this little image, and there's still photos somewhere, you know.
So, you know what I mean?
So I think obviously it's always been part of me, but I think it actually in a lot of ways does help me to understand the human condition. If that means if it's all voices and variables, then.
Well, definitely, theatre is about understanding, human nature. You've studied, so then you studied in University of Tasmania. You've also done an honours at Sydney Uni. And your dissertation, which I love, is interviewing playwrights and directors, focusing on a playwright's intent and how it's directed. Is it the kind of connection between the playwright and the director?
Absolutely.
Is that what it is?
And again, this was for, when did I finish? 2012. This was when the stage, and your listeners will recall, there was, and it's happening somewhat still, there was a lot of discussion that the director was promoting their own vision over the playwright's vision.
Absolutely. It was a kind of director's theatre, really.
Absolutely. And I was very interested, if you see the works that I've directed, especially early on, like my master's show, was actually a production called A Kind of Alaska by Howard Pinter. So basically I've always been interested in, maybe it is because of my family background, because I didn't say this, my dad actually was a published author in his own right. Words always be important. So back to neurodiversity and my journey, so to speak, Regina, I actually couldn't read or write properly till I was 8.
Right.
And I never forget, I went to a school which actually helped kids, you know, it wasn't reverted that as much back then, but on a dyslexia, etc. And I was so shattered. I had an end of year, you know, presentation, and it was actually a production of A Ginger Man. And I was actually given the role as a narrator. And I still hold very dear and very sad memories, bad joke, that I wasn't cast as a gingerbread man. I was cast as a narrator because I was the best reader. So this is what you get X amount of years later. So, yeah.
So how does, I mean, one of the things you've spoken on panels and all kinds of things in events, and one of them I noticed was, what is it to be a professional artist with a disability, and what is it to be?
I think this is a thing too also. I always think it's very important to put on this note that basically, to my opinion, and again, this is a whole discussion in itself, going down Alice's rabbit hole when we say
yes.
This.
Yes.
there's a lot of rabbit holes in the Dan Graham story, you know. But I think it's very interesting to see how we actually, when I say professional artists, it also gets back to how institutions, basically in terms of training, if that makes sense. And that I would like to think that we are in a stage that, especially, and anyone who knows me knows I am very proud of my multi-diverse nature. And when we look at it, that people still, how do I say this? I always make a comment that, and I'm talking about the performing arts, and this may be a bit controversial, disability as a whole is still the last diversity which hasn't been properly addressed in my book. And also a lot of people that I know in the sector would agree with me when I say that, you know. And how do we get past, like, I'll give you an example. I had a meeting at one place about a project that I'm working on with Bill Shakespeare.
Yes.
And I promoted or tried to pitch it to another theatre company. And this is, I won't mention who, but I had a meeting with someone I know. And I said, so what's your interest in neurodiversity, Dan? As I always joke, I say that was my second outing experience, and saying in terms of neurodiversity. And the comment was with a pause, but you're seen as so normal, Dan. How's that possible? And basically, no, obviously I can communicate, but how does an individual be labelled Dan Graham or anyone? How can you respond to that?
And you're listening to Stages. I'm Regina Botros, and I am talking with Dan Graham. And there is a sense of, like, still an invisibility, I suppose, to it.
Absolutely.
But then, how do you bring it to light? So tell me a little bit about the Bell Shakespeare engagement.
This literally came to me, it was really funny, a couple of years ago. This has been a passion project in terms of access, simmering, because I had been seeing, not Viola Hall, but a number of people basically talking about, let's just say it, about artists with a disability who basically don't have a disability themselves. And as I I think a bit.
Right, yes. Well,
basically people representing other people. And as I said, obviously I do believe in the concept of allies, but there's a difference between allies and people that basically feel like they know best. And I think that's another thing, which another time. But with a project with Bill Shakespeare, it came to me. I've always, ironically, for someone there, as I said, couldn't wait to, it was A, I've always, when I said always, actually it's probably from about 9 or 10, I always loved the work of Shakespeare, which sounds quite interesting concept.
It does,
Exactly. And I just, I was going to say warm to it or responded to it. And obviously, as I always make a joke, there's a reason why we still perform Shakespeare today. But at the same time, I do know there's been a lot of talk about seeing Shakespeare, inverted commas, as the white, quote, Anglo-Saxon male playwright, if that makes sense.
Yes, indeed.
In a playwright, absolutely, absolutely. But I did basically in my study, and as I said, I'm a huge researcher. I love doing my own dramaturgy for my own productions. And I had seen there basically had not been much discussion actually on disability as such and Shakespeare, and then with a particular focus on neurodiversity.
Within and the plays and within the characters?
Within the plays.
Yeah.
And I did notice that in my lens, for a better word, that a number of characters did identify, as I said, neurodiversity is such a
Broad term. Wow. Give me an example.
I always give the example, basically, if you look at someone like Ophelia, obviously I see herself as someone who suffers depression.
Right,
you know,
of course.
You know, it makes sense.
Yes,
absolutely.
Of course. Yeah.
And things like that. And even if you want to go the other end, if you look at someone like Lear, who I see that identifies as being almost like the Alzheimer's kind of dementia
spectrum. Of course.
Exactly. So it's a wide term.
Well, that's a really interesting study.
Absolutely. And it's just taken me again down Alice's wandering hole, you know.
And
it keeps going. And Bill, I actually have known Pete Evans, artistic director for, must be, it was even when I was down in Tassie, I actually interviewed him for my master's down there.
Yeah.
And I talked to Pete about it one day. And he said, no, there's something interesting in that. But alas, like everyone else in the performing arts, this time of COVID, that's been the same, giving us as a team, you know, all involved, extra time to work on it, because it has also been supported by the Sydney Festival as well as Accessible Arts. So we did have literally our first development only a few weeks before literally the whole world went into lockdown. And there were predominantly artists identified as neurodiverse, professional artists. And basically part of the initial study, which was very important to me, was to have a survey available that basically industry professionals could, since I've had this interest, and as I said, this is even before the project with Bill, my fellowship on accessibility and access in the UK, time in New York, Chicago, LA, etc. I've had a lot of artists and off-head artists come there, people that even the public know, have come to me to say, Dan, if we identify we have a neurodiversity, we will lose or not gain work. Which I think is a shocking statement too.
Well, there is not a stigma, but there's not enough understanding maybe of what it means.
Absolutely. Like I know, like in terms of as part of the development, as I said, we had this survey and we had about a week or so where anyone who identified as neurodiverse anonymously kind of say, if they wish to actually respond. And we actually had over 60 responses.
Yeah, wow.
So it was really funny for me being...
Of practitioners? Artists? Artists, in particular.
Techs, the works, you know, people who work in administration, etc. Basically just responded how the Australian sector has maybe not been available, that's it.
What do you think then is maybe the answer? Is it just awareness? Is it what... You know, what are the steps that you personally are taking, like, to bring, I don't guess, more understanding or awareness?
Yeah, I would say the answer is, what I'm just going to say now, thank you so much for having me, in a sense that basically just the kind of awareness, visibility, whatever you want to call it, I think is key. Discussion, like, when we want to see disability as a whole, I always sound like Oprah when I say this, but 1 out of 5 Australians do have a disability of some form. So we're not talking about the other, if that makes sense. You know, it's I always make a comment, if you yourself don't have a disability, I can bet you any money you like, someone very close to you will. And what I would love to see, the example I always give, when I was lucky enough to work on the mother on a direct in residency, which is part of a trilogy of the father, which obviously Anthony Hopkins and Olivia Colman are in at the moment, and that was at Atlantic Theatre Company. Yes. I did say to them, how do we actually, just what you're asking me now? And one of the first things after I was invited over, they asked me to provide them with information of what access requirements I needed. And I said to them, that was very nice of them to ask me. And I said, that's a question we will ask anyone from, and I don't mean this silly when I say this, from a box office to an artistic director. So if we, I would always like to think if we could actually have, number one, something as simple as a form where people could feel comfortable to disclose what access needs they have. But at the same time, what I'm trying to work towards, and this is long-term, but obviously I'm on this journey already, I would love to think, yes, we do have accessibility departments as such for the audience, and as anyone who's listening will know, when we think about accessibility, we do have Auslan, et cetera, which we will know, like the show I'm doing for Midsummer, which is obviously top of my mind. We do have, obviously, hearing loops, as I said. We do have wheelchair. I don't want to say spaces, but you know what I mean?
Yes. Allocated,
you know,
seating,
I mean?
Or
okay, yeah, that's one. Yeah, but I don't think we do. I would love to think we could have actually accessibility departments specifically actually for the artists. So there could be a person designated, and ideally it would be a person who identifies as having disability who could have their concerns. So basically, people who, what I'm very worried about, Regina, is I'm in it for the long haul, I think we can tell. But there are a lot of people, and especially in this time of COVID, as you said, which has been a lot of time from self-reflection. I do know a number of friends of mine who are, as I did say, who are professional artists with a disability, who are, if they're not already, on the verge of leaving because they simply don't feel their and support's a broad term, but let's just say their rights. And I know that's not, that sounds very Harvey Milk of me, but you know, but they're basically not being addressed. So if nothing else, we are losing a lot of great talent out there, that, or actually not having the talent actually, as I said, to start off with, like the, I'm thinking about an 18-year-old Dan Graham, you know, who may not feel comfortable or may not feel they've been heard or whatever, to have the support they need, and which I think is a great travesty that there are voices out there that not should, if I can be blunt about it now, must be heard, you know, and it doesn't necessarily have to be, and this is another last thing with genocide. I think it makes it very clear that I do not define myself, as I said, by my neurodiversity disability, and nor do the work I want to do exclusively deal with disability.
Yes, of
that's course. Not saying my work doesn't have that in my work, but like I think the work, like I think it's so funny, a very good friend of mine who saw Sam I Am in development, which we had at Brandix Flying Nun just before COVID.
Yeah, sounds terrific. One a one man show by a deaf
absolutely
artist. Yeah,
absolutely deaf queer artist Sam Martin, which it's a wonderful, which has been a wonderful experience, more ways than one. And basically, they said to me, I could see you in that production, Dad. I said, oh, what are you trying to say? What are you trying to say? You know, after talking about director's vision and all. But I think it gets back to how do we basically, I think it's sad that I even have to say publicly, you know, yes, disability is part of me, as is other forms of my identity. But I am not, inverted commas, the disabled director or the neurodiverse director. I'm just Dan, and that's what I always try to point out. And yes, it is part of my identity, and I do embrace it. But can we just maybe just some of that is, can we just let stories that haven't been told, whatever they are, you know, to be shown, and hopefully in this time of a Me Too movement, Black Lives Matter, etc., disability can be put in that category, if I've been too controversial, but where voices can actually be heard and seen.
Indeed. It is another, it's also tricky because, you know, being a woman actor or being a, you know, a woman of colour or, you know, Indigenous or all of these things, is it quota? Is it how do you address the imbalance, I suppose? And that's sort of the first place is, like you say, talking about it. So one last question, Dan, before you go. You found out, you've been doing drama, you've been involved in theatre, that your grandfather, there's some backstory. Can you tell me what this surprise was for you?
So it's a whole play in itself and whole saga in itself. But when I actually was doing my master's, I was making the comment that maybe it is because what we've just discussed with you now, that I like calling myself a method director in a sense that I like using, obviously, my personal experiences, whatever they are, that's not limited to disability, etc. As a result, I do love my actors who I work with feeling comfortable enough to be in a safe space method. And when I actually was doing my master's, which was a whole journey in itself, let's just say, and I just doing a bit of research, as I said, I did, and talking to my mum, etc., I found out that my grandfather, but he actually had created a first drama school, and he actually was very good friends with Stanislavski, you know, and a whole background of his actually teaching, etc. And
it
wasn't a deliberate intent on my part, but it just, what can I say? You can't take.
It's in the blood. That's what we're saying. It's in the blood.
Exactly. So that's a simple answer.
That is. Oh, well, Dan Graham, thank you again so much for joining me.
Thank you so much, Regina.
And that was Dan Graham, theatre director, disability rights and LGBTQ+ activist.